Great. Thank you so much, and welcome, everyone. It is a pleasure to have you here at the White House for what I think will be an interesting and informative afternoon. And I just want to start out by introducing those who have joined me, my colleagues and friends who have joined me on the stage, starting from my far left, Office of Management and Budget Director Peter Orszag. And then we have Department of Agriculture Deputy Secretary Kathleen Merrigan. Many of you may have read an article about her recently in the Washington Post. We have Surgeon General Regina Benjamin, Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar, and Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan. Please join me in welcoming them. And I just want to let you know that Secretary Duncan will have to leave a little bit early, but he is leaving two of his finest from the Department of Education behind here with us, so they'll be joining us throughout the afternoon. So just last night, and I'm not making this up, just last night I received an email from a good friend and former colleague. And she and her 7-year-old son had just finished working on his homework, and he had asked for a glass of milk. So she gave it to him, and after that, he looked at her and said, "So when are we planting a garden?" And she responded, "Well, we need to wait a little bit longer until it gets a little warmer, maybe in May." And he said, "Well, you know, Mama, Michelle Obama, the wife of the president, said that people have to eat healthy, so we need to plant a garden." My friend said that he then proceeded to rat out his friend, and I won't name his friend because there are cameras in, but he ratted out his friend who, quote, eats bad food and therefore is not healthy. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what I would say what we are fighting for. That kind of change, that kind of transformation, children, adults, people across all sectors thinking about eating right, eating healthy, and tackling this issue of childhood obesity. And now it is my pleasure to introduce someone who has given us her savvy, her smarts, her energy, and her passion around this issue, and certainly her leadership, someone who can convince CEOs and 7-year-olds, the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you all so much. It's a pleasure to be here with all of you. Let me begin by thanking Melody for that kind introduction, that wonderful story. It's happening in kitchens and households all over America, kids really moving for the change. I also want to thank Melody for her work in chairing the task force. She has been instrumental, and we've seen such significant movement under her leadership. I'd also like to thank several members of this administration who are providing invaluable leadership on this issue. Melody introduced them, but let me take time to also thank Secretaries Duncan and Salazar, OBM Director Peter Orszag, Surgeon General Regina Benjamin, Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Kathleen Merrigan, and Nancy Ann DePearl. Is Nancy Ann here? She is the director of the White House Office of Health Reform, and she obviously has been incredibly instrumental on this and so many efforts in this administration. Thank you all for your leadership. This has been an administration-wide effort, and I'm so proud of this team. Everyone in this administration has embraced this issue with a level of fervor and commitment. That's why we are able to be standing here today, having made so much progress in such a short period of time. This gathering has never happened before at the White House. It's one where we're bringing together teachers and child advocates, doctors and nurses, business leaders, public servants, researchers, and health experts to talk about one of the most serious and difficult problems facing our kids today, and that is the epidemic of childhood obesity in this country. We're here because we all care deeply about the health and well-being of America's children, and we've gathered folks from across America and across just about every relevant field because, in the end, solving this problem is going to take every single one of us. And that's really at the heart of the Let's Move campaign. We launched this campaign 2 months ago, but the idea actually was inspired by the planting of the White House Kitchen Garden. Last March, with the help of local students who have been so incredible, we planted the garden on the South Lawn of the White House, and it allowed us to begin a conversation about the importance not just of healthy eating, eating right, eating the good food, but also about getting exercise into our lives. The kids during that whole year of planting and harvesting showed so much enthusiasm, so much excitement about that garden and about the potential of the topic that we realized there was an opportunity to do much more because they were so open. So we launched Let's Move. The campaign is designed to raise awareness about the problem of childhood obesity and to focus on how we as a nation have to come together to solve it. My husband signed a presidential memorandum creating the first ever government-wide task force on childhood obesity, composed of representatives from key agencies across the government. And since then, I have spoken to so many people, I've heard from so many people across this country. I've met with mayors and governors, and I've asked them to do their part to build healthier cities and states. I've met with School Nutrition Association members, the folks who decide what's served in schools, and I've asked them to do their part to offer healthier meals and snacks to our kids at school. I've met with the food manufacturers and asked them to do their part to improve the quality of the food that they provide and to do a better job of marketing nutritious food to our kids. I've met with kids, met with a bunch of them the other day in my first town hall meeting full of kids. And they were wonderful. And I asked them to do their part. I asked them nicely, but I asked them to do their part as well. What I told them is that they were the most important players in this piece because it's up to them to make different decisions, to try to make it a little easier on their parents, to try new things and to incorporate exercise. And I've been meeting with parents, too, because we all need to do our parts as well. Because the fact is that our kids didn't do this to themselves. They don't decide the sugar content in soda, or the advertising content of a television show. Kids don't choose what's served to them for lunch at school and shouldn't be deciding what's served to them for dinner at home. And they don't decide whether there's time in the day or room in the budget to learn about healthy eating or to spend time playing outside. We make those decisions. That's all up to us. And I know how hard it is. I know how hard it is as a parent when you're bombarded by ads for junk food, when you're hit with a barrage of conflicting stories about what's healthy and what's not, when you always feel like you're failing to meet some impossible standard for working parents, or for any parents for that matter. We also know how hard it is for schools to provide nutritious lunches with just a few dollars to make that happen. We know the budget's constraints facing local governments in these tough times. And we all know how difficult this problem is when playgrounds and ballparks are competing with video games and social networking sites, and when our children are simply surrounded by many more opportunities to eat badly and to sit around than they are to eat well and move. But we also know this. That over the past 3 decades, childhood obesity rates in America have tripled. That is a fact. Nearly one-third of children in America now are overweight or obese. That's a reality. And unless we act now, things are only going to get worse. That is a fact. Let's Move recognizes this reality. And recognizes that there are a few things that we can do right now that can make a difference. First, we have to help parents and empower consumers by encouraging companies to offer healthier options and by providing more customer-friendly labels so that people can figure out what's healthy and what isn't. and there are tools and resources available right now to parents and kids at our website, letsmove.gov. Second, with 31 million children getting lunch through federal lunch programs, we can do so much more to provide healthy meals and snacks where our kids spend most of their days. And I am pleased that the Senate Agricultural Committee has made a significant contribution towards the President's goal of investing an additional $1 billion per year to ensure that the food provided to our children in schools is nutritious and healthy, and that fewer children in this country go hungry. Third, we can do much more to make sure that all families have access to healthy and affordable food in their own communities. 23.5 million Americans, including 6.5 million children, live in communities without a supermarket. That means far fewer healthier options are available to so many families who are going to be working to try to figure this out. They won't have access to the resources they need to do what we're asking them to do. So we're working with the private sector to reach a very ambitious goal, and that is to completely eliminate food deserts in this country. And finally, there is much, much more that we can do to help kids stay physically active, not just in school, but outside of school as well. And if we can make real progress in these four areas, then there's so much more else we can do, but these four areas, as a country, we can reach our ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal for Let's Move is to solve the problem of childhood obesity in a generation so that children born today grow up at a healthy weight with better notions of what is healthy, with better habits, who are incorporating exercise into their lives on a more regular basis, so there are more kids like the ones that Melody described who know what it even means to eat healthy. That's our goal. And to achieve this goal, we are going to need all of you. We're going to need all of you, your insight, your experience, your guidance, and that's why we're so excited about this gathering here today, because you all know this issue better than just about anyone. So many of you have dedicated your lives to fighting this battle, and many of you have are just thankful that there's someone else shining the spotlight on what you have known for a long, long time. This folks in this room, all of you working together can do more than just about anyone to help us tackle this issue. What we have done is started a national conversation. We've started an important national conversation, but we need your help to propel that conversation into a national response. So today is very important. The work that you do here is really meaningful, which is why you have so many heavy hitters here, because we need your advice and your input. And to make that happen, we're going to have you break into smaller sessions led by members of the task force that will focus on these four key components of Let's Move. And the information that we collect here today will be essential to construct the final report that's going to come from the task force, a report that will serve as a very important roadmap with goals, benchmarks, measurable outcomes that will help us collectively tackle this challenge. So with that, all I have to say is let's move. Let's get this going. Thank you all so much. Thank you for your energy, your expertise. Thank our administration. I am confident because of the stories we hear from kids that they're ready for us to move. They are more than ready. Once again, they're waiting for us. So let's get this started. And thank you so much and have a productive meeting. Thanks so much.
Well, as the First Lady mentioned, on February 9th, the President signed a memorandum creating the Task Force on Childhood Obesity, and he charged the task force with writing an action plan to solve the problem of childhood obesity within a generation. Consistent with the President's charge, the plan must not only include recommendations for federal government actions, but also keeping the lights on. Not only creating a plan for federal government action, but also from actions from everyone across all sectors, across society, including the private sector. The task force benefits from the expertise of 12 federal agencies, and all agencies are present and accounted for here today. There are members and representatives from those departments and agencies among us in the audience. And those representatives will be engaging with you when we break in about half an hour or so for our breakout sessions. But from the very, very beginning, we've always said that the federal government can't and should not do this alone. If there was ever a walk and talk moment, this is it. We need everyone, all hands on deck. So our plan will include not only recommendations for the government, but for all actors, including the private sector. In fact, we requested, and many of you, in fact, we received thousands of responses from people across the country, sending us their most insightful ideas for what our initiative should do and the actions that our task force should recommend to the President. So for those people who sent those kinds of recommendations to us, who may be watching today at home, thank you so much for doing that. But today we want to continue that conversation. We're looking for your very, very best thinking across the sectors on the steps that we can take to solve childhood obesity. So in the breakout sessions that we're about to have, we'll be asking you to identify 3 to 5 of the best ideas, the most important actions that you think the task force should in turn recommend to the President. Again, not just federal government activity, but also actions by state and local actors, the private sector, nonprofits, the philanthropic sector, community organizations, and others. And as I mentioned, we want each of your groups to come up with 3 to 5 recommendations, not 10 to 15. I know I've been in breakout groups and you come up with about your 50th idea and you think, well, we can't cut that one. But we really do want you to think very critically about this so that we can in turn take that information and the task force can use it, synthesize it with our ideas and make great recommendations to the President. As many of you know, we have divided our work into 4 pillars. And those are the ones that have been cited in the President's memorandum and that the First Lady also referenced. And I'll mention them one more time. 1, ensuring access to healthy and affordable food. 2, increasing physical activity in schools and communities. 3, providing healthier food in schools. And 4, empowering parents with information and tools to make good decisions for themselves and for their families. We're going to delve very deeply into those issues during the breakout sessions, but before we go there, I'd like to engage the members of the panel, our administration officials who are sitting on the stage, and ask them a few questions just to provide a little bit more context for you. And after I ask them questions, we'll certainly provide an opportunity for you to do the same until we have to break to go into our breakout sessions. So what I'd like to do is actually to start with Secretary Duncan, and talk about the fact that often people think about childhood obesity and they think about the issue of nutrition. They think about food, you know, what you're putting in your body. But often people don't think about output, think about physical activity. And I know that's something that's very, very important to you. It's something that you've certainly gone around the country talking about as you've gone into schools. And I was wondering if you could share with us your thoughts on that. How can we engage people around physical activity, particularly in our schools around the country?
I'm happy to have the opportunity. Thanks so much for your leadership and the First Ladies on this issue. And on the nutrition side, the partnership with the Department of Agriculture has been extraordinary. Your leadership and courage and, you know, better food in school, in breakfasts, lunches, dinners, vending machines is so important. But as all of you know, if students aren't active, we don't get where we need to go. And I think so often there's been this like false dichotomy or false choice. We're either serious about academics or we're going to let kids run around. And we're all shaped by our own experiences, and I was lucky to have 2 really well-educated parents, both of whom were educators, and education was very, very important in our house. But I was one of those young boys that if I didn't have a chance to run around during a school day, I wasn't going to make it. It was going to be very, very tough on my teachers. And rather than being a false choice, I would argue if we want our students to be much more successful academically, they have to be active. These things aren't in conflict. They reinforce each other. And so whether it's before school, whether it's PE, whether it's recess, I'm a big fan of recess, whether it's at lunch, whether it's after school, whether it's in the community, we have to have opportunities for our students from the earliest of ages, not just in high school, but our 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 year olds, to be physically active and to start to, again, build a healthy lifestyle. The First Lady talks so much about food deserts, and that's something that I've worried about for a long time in inner city communities, but we have sort of recreation deserts, and guess what? That's often the same communities. And we have to create playgrounds, we have to create cultures, we have to create time, and we have to demonstrate that students who are physically fit, who are physically active, are going to be much better in class, less discipline problems, they're going to concentrate better, they're going to be more engaged in school, they're going to enjoy coming to school more often, and we have to get past this us versus them mentality. So we're going to work very, very hard more broadly around creating more well-rounded educations for children. We think one of the constant critiques I've heard as I've traveled the country is a narrowing of the curriculum. And yes, math and reading are very, very important, but so is science and social studies and the fine arts and foreign languages. And so is PE and so is recess. And we're going to try and put a huge amount of money. We have $1 billion in our budget to reinforce a well-rounded curriculum. We have unprecedented competitive resources that we want to put behind places that are demonstrating ability to get better results for students. And I am absolutely convinced as we look around the country and frankly as we look internationally that places that are doing a great job with students take this physical activity very, very seriously. So we have a long way to go, but we see this just extraordinary opportunity, and the fact that we can work these things at the same time in partnership makes me think in the next 2 or 3 years we can be in a fundamentally different place as a country. And again, I just want to thank all of you for pushing this issue so hard.
Great. Thank you, Secretary Duncan. Secretary Salazar, I want to turn to you next because you have, I think, the other side of the coin. I mean, Secretary Duncan was talking about what schools can do. You've got the great outdoors, the Department of Interior. I was wondering if you could talk to us about other ways that we can engage our children in physical activity, given some of the resources that you know exist around the country.
Absolutely. Thank you, Melody, for your leadership on this issue, and to the First Lady for her wonderful inspiration and example for all of the country. You know, there are other people here who will take care of the diet side and the input side. On the other side, on the exercise side, I think that the challenge that we face is a stark one, and that is that we need to get our young people and our society as a whole connected more to the outdoors than they have been. And today, unfortunately, we have our young people spending a lot more time in front of computers and televisions and iPods than we do in the outdoors. So there is a disconnect between our children and the outdoors. So one of the challenges that we face is how do we get our children outdoors doing the kind of exercise that is important for their health and to address this issue of obesity. And from our position at the Department of Interior, working with our colleagues, transportation, EPA, agriculture, and so many others, I think there are so many opportunities, Melody, where we can create these places for young people to get to the outdoors. Within our own department, we have about 400 million visitors a year to our national parks and our Bureau of Land Management properties and so on. But when you look across the spectrum of outdoor opportunities, you think about the great urban parks of America and the riverways that we have in places like Chicago and St. Louis and Denver, Colorado, how we get in those urban communities where we provide opportunities for young people to ride their bikes along the riverways or along the parks that we create in our country. That is a huge opportunity for us. How we work with local communities and schools to try to locate some of our parks close to schools. We have an opportunity that Director John Jarvis, head of National Parks, is telling me one of the things we do is we give out a lot of money to the states. Well, as we give out money to the states for recreational activities and for state parks, well, how about co-locating some of those in a close proximity to schools so that when the kids are getting out for recess or after school, maybe instead of just playing on the hard top where they now play or in places where it may not be as quite as safe as just playing out in the outdoors and in the woods or close by, we ought to figure out what some of those partnerships are. But I believe that one of the great contributions of this administration, one of its legacies, will be what it does with the outdoors in terms of a conservation agenda for the 21st century. But that conservation agenda can only work if you have people connected to that agenda. And so getting people to connect to the outdoors is one of the things that we are very focused on within the Department of Interior.
Great. And now that we've talked a little bit about physical activity, you know, Deputy Secretary Merrigan, I want to ask you some questions about food and thinking about what we can and should be doing to make sure our kids are getting good, high-quality, healthy food in schools and access to those same kinds of foods when they're outside of their schoolyard, when they are in their neighborhoods, particularly some neighborhoods where they may not necessarily have access to it, as the First Lady and Arnie were discussing the food deserts around the country.
Thanks, Melody. First, I want to just say, and the First Lady captured this in her remarks, she talked about hunger in America, and she talked about the problems of obesity. And one of the things I like to tell people is, mm-hmm. it seems like a paradox, but actually stems from the same problem, lack of access to good, healthy food. And our school programs, our feeding programs are really important. As the First Lady said, over 31 million children will have school lunch today. Very important. But we know from an Institute of Medicine report that the USDA commissioned our school lunches need a little bit of an overhaul. Mm-hmm. We need to do much better in terms of providing healthy food to our school children, both in the school lunch program, as well as the 11 million children that get school breakfast, and the 2.4 million children that are part of our summer school feeding programs. We've got a great opportunity this year. Child nutrition reauthorization, mm-hmm. the First Lady mentioned that. We're working with Congress to do a variety of things. We know we need money, and we would like to see the president's commitment of $1 billion a year over 10 years, an infusion of new funds to do some new things in those programs. We think that's extremely important. We'd like to see increased reimbursement rates. We'd like to see farm-to-school programs. We'd like to see new technology, and overall more fruits and vegetables, whole grains, low-fat dairy in those school feeding programs, and we're working with Congress on that. But in the meantime, we've got to do with what we have already, and so we've been using our Recovery Act dollars to put in school equipment. That's really important. If you have a salad bar, you can deliver food in a different way. Kids are going to eat those salads. We've been working on certification of schools, so when we have low income, a lot of kids with reduced or free lunches, doing an overall school certification, make an ease of access. We should have bureaucratic barriers to kids who need these foods, getting them. We have a Healthier Food School Challenge, where we're challenging 600 schools have already signed up. We want to get 3,000 in another year. They're taking it on themselves, the challenge. There's a lot of stuff that's going on in that environment. But kids do go home at the end of the day, and we have neighborhoods, as the First Lady said, where there's no access to food. In fact, it's 11.5 million of those 22 million that the First Lady mentioned, where people are very low income. And it's more than a mile to a supermarket. We know they're going to corner stores, sometimes they're going to liquor stores to buy food, and they're paying more money for less healthy food. So we're using some of our rural development programs to help, particularly in rural areas. Maybe you don't have the population to support a brick and mortar store, but you could have a mobile grocery. We're working on some innovations like that. And we also have in the FY11 budget proposal between HHS, Treasury, and USDA, the Healthy Food Financing Initiative, which is a major undertaking to tackle food deserts in both rural and urban America. And we hope that Congress works with us on that, and we get that tool very soon.
Great. Thank you. Well, Surgeon General Benjamin, I know from our conversations that you recently were testifying on this issue and that you've also been all over the country. And in fact, this weekend, I think you said that you're going to have an all-child obesity weekend, all weekend, this coming weekend. You'll be in several different states. And you also have the benefit of really seeing this issue from a pragmatic standpoint as a physician. I was wondering if you could give us a sense of what you tell people when you go out and talk to them and what you've seen. What's happened in the issue of childhood obesity over the last 10 plus years, 20 years, in terms of childhood obesity rates, what you're seeing in communities? Just put it in that kind of context for us.
Great. Thank you, Millie. I also would like to thank you and the First Lady for continuing to keep this issue in front of everyone, because it is probably one of the most challenging and serious issues facing our country today and the health and well-being of Americans. You know, just since 1980, obesity rates have doubled in adults and tripled in children. And the problem is even worse in amongst blacks, Hispanics, and Native American children. And needless to say, we've been working on this problem for some time. And although we've made some strides and some things have gotten better since the first Surgeon General's report in 2001, he had what we call a call to action. But we still have more than 1 in 3 children who are currently overweight or obese. And we see the sobering statistics that these numbers have on the rates of chronic diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, and other chronic illnesses that are affecting our children more and more. Just a few weeks ago, a study from the University of North Carolina School of Medicine reported that obese children as young as age 3 show signs of an inflammatory response that's been linked to heart disease in later life. And you know, just like the First Lady and others gathered here today, I felt that we needed to have a coordinated response, a coordinated national response to address this issue. So in January, the First Lady joined me when I released my first paper called The Surgeon General's Vision for a Healthy and Fit Nation. And in that paper, I lay out ways to respond to this particular health problem. And one of the ways is that we need to involve the parents. The parents are the first teachers. And every day, parents make decisions about food, about the playtime, about family time. And we need to make sure that the parents have the information that they need to help their children to make good and healthy choices. And the parents should also remember that if their children see them enjoying physical activity and eating healthy foods, the children are more likely to do the same. And there's also this growing consensus that we as a nation need to create communities that and environments where the healthy choices are the easy choices and the affordable choices. And finally, I want to change that national conversation from a negative conversation about being obese and illness to a positive conversation about being healthy and being fit. And I think the Let's Move campaign is well on its way to do that.
Thank you. And in a minute, I'm going to open the microphone to have you ask questions. So think about the questions you want to ask the members of our panel. But before I do, I want to turn to my colleague, Peter Orszag, who is the head of our Office of Management and Budget. And one of the things I think you've done so well and so convincingly, Peter, is talking about this issue, not just from the perspective of this being a health issue, but also what the costs are to our society when it comes to childhood obesity. And I was wondering if you could share your thoughts on that with our audience here as well as our audience watching at home.
Absolutely, Melody. And also let me join in thanking you, the First Lady, and others for the focus on this issue, which has costs to our society, not only in terms of health, I'll come back to that in a second, but also just in terms of healthcare costs themselves. The typical obese beneficiary costs roughly almost $1,500 more per year than someone with a normal body mass index. The aggregate costs of obesity in our healthcare system, according to the CDC, are already about $150 billion a year. And that number is projected to almost double over the next decade or so, at which point obesity-related healthcare costs would account for more than a fifth of overall healthcare spending. So quite stunning direct healthcare costs. There are also then productivity and other costs associated with obesity, with obese workers being less productive at work, having other associated costs. So all in, very substantial costs, and not only in the narrow green eye shade perspective, but I think it is not appreciated how great the health risks are associated with obesity. Substantially larger, for example, than with smoking. And the evidence suggests that the association between obesity and chronic conditions is substantially higher than between smoking and chronic conditions, and that having a body mass index in the obesity range is equivalent to aging 20 years in terms of the chronic conditions that you face. So 40 may be the new 30, but if you're obese, unfortunately, 40 is the new 60. And that has very substantial costs for the people involved. And then I would just end by saying, and I've never seen many of the people in, for example, the front row, but I've read a lot of what you've written. I think there's a lot of growing evidence on what we can do, both through economics and behavioral economics and through the social norms that apply, which I know are the focus of a lot of this activity, that can make very substantial progress. So I think economists are now realizing that the traditional Econ 101 approach to problems associated with high-calorie, low-nutrient food and lack of exercise need to be supplemented by a whole host of other interventions, and I think that's exactly what is happening, and I think that's a very healthy development.
Great, thank you. Well, now I'd like to find out if any of you have questions. Well, great. We'll start right here. If you could give us your name and your organization, where you're from, that would be terrific.
Dr. Khan.
Oh, one second. We'll have a microphone for you.
Dr. Khan from Las Vegas.
It's on.
And I'm coming from a little perspective that probably is not discussed much, is the larger employers. I mean, you know, we have a very large industry of casinos, hotels, thousands of rooms, and they all provide free breakfast, lunch, and dinner to their employees. And I'm a consultant to MGM Mirage Company on their wellness programs and disease management programs, and one of the things that company did was gradually start transitioning their cafeteria into healthy foods and things that were not known to the employees, like take away the fried French fries into baked fries, and somebody says, today's fries don't taste good. So, well, something happened, kind of a thing. But right now, they're transitioning into a very healthy cafeteria where all this, so it does two things. You get a healthy employee population, and then that translates into the children and their own kids at home. When they're getting healthy food and they're seeing the benefit, it translates. So I think that's one area larger employers can do a lot to transition into healthy cafeterias for free meals.
Great. Thank you.
Can I respond to
that? Sure.
I think that's wonderful, and you're to be commended on that. I'd also just like to remind you that it would be good if the large employers would also provide clean and private places for mothers to breastfeed if they want to breastfeed. Because we know that if a mother exclusively breastfeeds her child for the first 6 months, there's a very likelihood that that child will not be obese.
If I could just add one more thing, which is it's not just, and as I see Brian Wansick and others, it's not just the food that's provided, but someone in the corporation at some point is deciding, is the fruit at the front of the cafeteria line or at the back? How is it presented? Where and how, what is the context? And that has a very substantial effect too. So you can maintain freedom of choice and a full array of food choices, but someone's deciding whether the cookies are at the front of the line or the fruit's at the front of the line, and it has a very substantial effect on what people eat.
Right, exactly. Okay. Why don't we go right here, the front on this side?
Hi, good morning. My name is Pilar Lorenzana-Campo, and I work for an organization called Public Health Law and Policy. And on behalf of all the folks that I work with, I just really want to thank you for your firm commitment. Obviously, the president and the first lady's commitment, but more importantly, also the task force members' commitment. And the work that we do involves this cross collaboration directly in communities, working with school districts, partnering with public health departments. I do want to add that maybe the other thing that the task force might want to consider is actually the issue of land use and public transportation, and how actually these types of planning decisions have a very real impact on how much exercise people get in their daily lives, or how close they live to grocery stores, or how close they live to a park. So I think that maybe having that conversation with other members of agencies, maybe I know the EPA and DOT have this new Sustainable Communities Initiative, and I think that they could add a great deal to the conversation. So thank you.
Great. That's one. Kathleen?
If people haven't checked it out yet, you can go to USDA's website, and we have an environmental food atlas, and that's been a part of the effort that's ongoing, so communities can see where there may be food deserts, problems of transport to get to certain foods, what the availability is. It's a great new tool that we'll continue to build upon, but it's there for people to start with if you're in a local community and you want to begin work on this issue.
Absolutely. And it's great to hear you talk about sustainable communities. I know my office and Peter's office have been working on that. It's wonderful to hear when people know the work that you're doing, so thank you for that. Why don't we go a little further back, the woman in the black sweater and pink top.
My name is Tenley Albright, and I'm the director of MIT Collaborative Initiatives. And I like what you said about creating an environment of healthy choices. We've just finished a 2.5-year study with Columbia University through the Earth Institute and with the United Health Foundation. And we have observed so many wonderful things that are happening and being done across the country. We study sort of what the gaps are, and we have come to the conclusion that all of these wonderful things that are going on, it will be very hard to make them sustainable long term unless we look at the food system and consider refocusing the food system so that a real systemic approach can perhaps help all the things that are being done. So thank you for what you're all doing.
Okay, thank you. Comment on that? Why don't we go to the woman with the blue shirt and black suit? I always feel like a fashion show announcer when I do this.
Hi, I'm Toni Yancey. I'm a professor of health services at the UCLA School of Public Health and a board member of the Partnership for a Healthier America. And I wanted to say that thanks to Brian's work and others, people are talking a lot about the behavioral economics of eating. But we also need to think about the behavioral economics of exercise and physical activity. And in fact, there's no inherent drive for physical activity as there is for eating, such that we will have, you know, great meetings with lots of healthy refreshments now, unlike, you know, 20 years ago when we would only have, you know, unhealthy refreshments, or 30 years ago when people would have been smoking in this room. So now we need not to coop people up for hours on end without physical activity.
Yeah,
not like that's exercise now. As a regular part. And we, in fact, just conducted a systematic review of the literature and found 40 articles that demonstrated the effectiveness from a physical activity as well as cognitive, mood, and other standpoint of integrating short bouts of physical activity into the regular workplace, school, and church routines. So I just like to advocate for it. We have a project called Instant Recess, but there's Energizers, Take 10, Pausa para tu Salud, and lots of others.
Great.
You know,
thank
I'd
you.
I'd like to just say that that goes along with changing to that positive conversation and having people to exercise because it's fun, because they enjoy it. You're not going out to work out because if you don't, you'll have a stroke in 10 years. You're going to be, we didn't go disco dancing because somebody said we had to exercise. It's because we had fun. You want to go and build it back into our everyday lives. You also get close to people, and we don't have many opportunities to get with people. So if we could get moving and start to do things because they're fun.
And on May 3rd, the National Physical Activity Plan will be launched. And I know, Dr. Benjamin, you may or may not be able to come to the National Press Club that day, but WPFW radio station and all the Pacifica stations throughout the country will be broadcasting an instant recess break from 1 to 1:10 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 10 to 10 a.m. on the West Coast.
Melody? There's a lot of enthusiasm for that, Peter. We're going to walk you across the street and introduce you to someone. You can tell them we should get out more.
Can I just add very quickly, I could not agree more that we need to be applying much more. I think there's now a growing literature on behavioral economics on the calorie input side. The output side, there's some promising work, but I don't think it's as built out. So for example, I suppose, but I've never been able to find empirical proof, that very easy access to a gym or to some kind of physical activity, just like your instant recess, makes a huge difference. Even if you have to walk 4 blocks to a gym, a huge drop-off, I suspect, relative to immediate access. There's other ongoing research, and unfortunately some of it is not the way we would necessarily want our minds to work, but that, for example, signing up for penalties that happen in a public way or in a painful way, if you don't do X, seems to work better than the carrot approach. But the broader point is, not that I've done that or anything, but the broader point is that I think a lot more effort can go into that side of the equation too, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Great. Well, We're going to have to split into our breakout groups now, but this is, there's such wonderful energy, and obviously people have so much to add to this conversation. So we want to ask you to take that to the breakout sessions, and then we'll meet back here soon. And just to let you know, the breakout room numbers are on your name tags. If you're going to 200 level rooms, you need to exit the doors on the right, 400 level rooms to your left, and we will see you back here shortly. Thank you so much.